Hello, this is Atah Durakan with the Decatur Herald and Review for Tuesday, December 30th, 2025, coming to you from my home studio. And we'll start this last Tuesday reading of 2025 on the front page. Severe weather, tornado strikes Macon County, several homes lost, God is good as no injuries are reported. This article is by Scott Perry and Donette Beckett, H&R staff writers, and it comes to us from Long Creek. Skyline Drive was void of much activity Monday morning, a stark contrast to the scene some 15 hours earlier after a tornado wreaked havoc on this neighborhood. Shortly after the second of two tornadoes touched down in Macon County at approximately 3:10 p.m. Sunday, emergency responders, family members, friends, and volunteers converged on the area off of Baltimore Road. They arrived to find a neighborhood in various stages of disarray, homes damaged, trees toppled, utility lines down, and debris scattered by the strong winds. Lieutenant Scott Flannery with the Macon County Sheriff's Office said Sunday night that up to 9 homes were destroyed, while others escaped with minimal damage. Dan Watkins was one of the lucky ones. "Our house is intact, but it took the power meter off, so we have no power," Watkins said Monday morning. "And it destroyed the shed. We were fortunate. A couple doors down, it took the whole roof off, and I found a screen door." Despite many people being home at the time of the tornado, Flannery said no injuries were reported. It was a similar scene Sunday in the area around Walmsley Road, Jeanette Drive, and Bentonville Road, where tornado damage was also reported. Damage also was observed to trees and a home along the Elwin Blacktop between Elwin and Mount Zion. Tony Anello was at a birthday party when the storm that spawned the tornadoes entered Macon County. "I was following the storm online, and when I noticed the radar signature showing the circulation was over my house, I started home after it had passed," he said, worried about his 2 dogs. He arrived to find his home at the corner of Bentonville and Mount Zion Road intact and his dog safe, but the garage was gone. "The entire garage, the contents of it, are scattered at least half a mile that way," he said. "The garage door is four doors down." He immediately called his wife to tell her what he found. "I got a phone call saying the garage is gone. I thought it was a joke. I thought he was messing with me," Brittany Anello said. She could tell by the tone of his voice he wasn't joking. "But I just didn't really believe it. God is good. No one got hurt," Tony said. Like his counterparts on Skyline, he also praised the response from those wanting to help him and others in his neighborhood. A Macon County Emergency Management Agency news release stated a tornado also briefly touched down at approximately 3:05 p.m. Sunday, crossing Illinois 48 near Blue Mound. No damage was immediately identified in the Blue Mound area. A joint damage assessment involving emergency management agency officials, the National Weather Service, and the American Red Cross was underway Monday. According to the National Weather Service in Lincoln, meteorologists assess the damage after visiting the storm-affected areas. "From that, they will determine how strong it is," said Chris Gielhart, meteorologist. Officials reported downed power lines and tree damage across the area. Meteorologists will study the start and the ending of the tornadoes, as well as the damage. "We also have to look at how the buildings were constructed and things like that," Gielhart said. Monday's high wind and lower temperatures added challenges to the assessment, according to Tammy Schneider, coordinator for the Macon County Emergency Management Agency. "We worked together to get it completed as quickly as possible," she said. "The goal for the agencies is to meet any unmet needs so that we can get people the resources that they need," Schneider said. According to the EMA, the residents whose homes were damaged were able to find shelter. "They either went to family or friends," Schneider said. "We had a couple of families that tarped their roofs, had generators, and hunkered down in place." After Monday's strong winds subside, the forecast call for a return to typical winter weather with temperatures ranging from the upper 30s to mid-teens, but with sunny skies. and a couple of color photos here. A small one, scattered debris from a tornado destroyed garage along Bentonville Road is shown Sunday, December 28th, and there's just debris and damage everywhere. Larger color photo here, it shows a roof off a home at the intersection of Walmsley and Sand Creek Road sustained extensive damage from a tornado that passed through Macon County on Sunday, December 28th. And the photo is taken leading up to the home, looking down the driveway. A large tree with its trunk facing us is on the left of the photo. On the right, there is just a peaked roof, shingles, everything just sitting on the edge of the driveway. Immediately behind that, the main house showing extensive damage and pieces missing. Scott Perry Photos, Herald and Review. Moving on to A2 on the local page, child sex offender gets probation. Tony Reed, Decatur. A child sex offender's crimes that sparked an investigation that stretched from Mount Zion to California has ended in Decatur with the conviction of defendant Robert N. Miola. The 51-year-old man who lists an address in Port Hueneme, California, appeared in Macon County Circuit Court and admitted one count of aggravated criminal sexual abuse. The plea was part of a deal negotiated by defense attorney Karen Root. Five additional counts of aggravated criminal sexual abuse, two counts of predatory criminal sexual assault, and two charges of criminal sexual assault were dismissed by Judge Jeffrey Geisler as part of the plea deal. Miola was sentenced to 36 months probation and 180 days in the Macon County Jail, but that was canceled out with credit for the time served since his arrest and extradition back to Decatur. The Mount Zion Police Department reportedly told the Herald and Review the case dates back to between 2005 and 2008 and involved a child under the age of 13. The victim had lived in both Mount Zion and Decatur and had come forward to file a complaint with police in July of 2019. Officers from Mount Zion launched an investigation that saw them working with law enforcement agencies as far afield as Texas and Utah. Lieutenant Mike Foster with the Mount Zion Department said officers from those agencies also interviewed the victim and other witnesses. An arrest warrant was obtained in October of 2019, and Miola had been taken into custody November 4th of that year by U.S. Marshals in San Diego, California. The charges against Miola had been scheduled for a bench trial December 1st, but he appeared in court December 18th and said he was willing to take the plea deal. The victim appeared in court via a Zoom link and gave a victim impact statement before the judge pronounced sentence. As a further part of his punishment, the defendant was also ordered to pay $250 to have his DNA added to a criminal database overseen by the Illinois State Police. Explosions shake Decatur neighbors. Donette Beckett, Decatur. Neighbors in the Rock Springs area were surprised by loud explosions for several days during the weekend. According to the Macon County Sheriff's Office, residents stated that the explosions had knocked pictures off of walls and set off car alarms. On Sunday, deputies responded to the 6500 block of West Rock Springs Road to the report of the explosions. They were able to locate the source and learned that the individual identified as Roger Major, 57, had been detonating large quantities of tannerite, a binary explosive target that is detonated by a high-velocity bullet. Mr. Major admitted to detonating the tannerite on his property, but was unconcerned about the effects the explosions were having on multiple neighbors. Macon County Sheriff's Lieutenant Scott Flannery said in a news release, Major was arrested for reckless conduct and provided with a notice to appear in court. According to the Sheriff's Department, tannerite is legal to possess in Illinois. However, users are restricted to less than 50 pounds of the material, must have a valid Illinois FOID card, and must use it in a safe manner, Flannery stated. Man charged with gas station vandalism. Tony Reed, Decatur, has this article. A violent confrontation that flared after a man was denied the use of a Decatur gas station bathroom led to him screaming, "It's a man's world," and charging at a female clerk who shot him in the face with pepper spray, police report. At that point, a male customer intervened to help the 33-year-old clerk, who was pushed up against the counter and still in danger of being harmed, according to Sergeant Brandon Rolfs with the Decatur Police Department. The suspect, age 36, decided to exit the store but then walked right up to the now locked front door and reverse-kicked or horse-kicked the glass, which caused the glass in one of the doors to shatter. The incident happened around 11:26 p.m. Saturday at the Circle K gas station in the 500 block of North Main Street in downtown Decatur. The man was booked on preliminary charges of aggravated battery and criminal damage and given a notice to appear in court. Rolfe said the trouble had started when the man asked to use the restroom and was told he could not. He had then asked if a particular female employee still worked at the station, and when told staff couldn't disclose work schedules, the man screamed his "It's a Man's World" comments and insulted the female clerk. At that point, he was told he needed to leave and exited the front door of the gas station store. Said Rolfe's, the employee followed him to the front door and essentially told him not to bother coming back if he was going to be disrespectful. Rolfe said the man responded with threats before charging at the clerk. On video surveillance, you can see that when he charges toward her, he is grabbing her right arm and then pushing her back through the doorway into the counter area. And then she pulled out the pepper spray. She used it in self-defense. This particular gas station has a tough history with the use of its bathroom. Police reports show that around 1 a.m. November 30th, a man had emerged from the bathroom and told a clerk he had fallen over and ripped the sink off the wall. An employee who went to check found the broken sink on the floor while water was spraying everywhere from the broken pipes. That 50-year-old suspect had fled the station but was found by police patrols a short time later and booked on a charge of criminal damage. It's an interesting article on the weather page, Greenland Q&A. Territorial spat continues. Trump again increases tension with NATO ally Denmark over Ireland. This article is by Jacob Granholt Peterson, Stein Jacobson, and Soren Jepsen, Reuters. President Donald Trump reasserted that the United States needs Greenland for national security and said a newly appointed special envoy would lead the charge, drawing sharp criticism from Denmark and Greenland. Why does Trump want the territory? Greenland's strategic location and resources could benefit the U.S. It lies along the shortest route from Europe to North America, vital for the U.S. ballistic missile warning system. The U.S. expressed interest in expanding its military presence on the Arctic island, including placing radars there to watch waters between the island, Iceland, and Britain used by Russian Navy vessels and nuclear submarines. Most Russian shipping in the Arctic is near Russia's own coast, though analysts say Russian submarines often travel the waters between Greenland, Iceland, and the UK. More broadly, the Arctic is becoming increasingly militarized with NATO states, China, and Russia expanding activity there. The island, whose capital, Nuuk, is closer to New York than Denmark's capital, Copenhagen, boasts mineral, oil, and natural gas wealth. But development was slow, and mining saw very limited investment. What is Greenland's status? The island, a former colony of Denmark, became a formal territory of the Nordic Kingdom in 1953 and is subject to the Danish Constitution. Relations between Greenland and Denmark were strained after revelations of historical mistreatment of Greenlanders under colonial rule. However, Trump's interest in the island prompted Denmark to do more to improve ties with Greenland. A 1951 agreement between the U.S. and Denmark gave the U.S. the right to move around freely and build military bases in Greenland as long as Denmark and Greenland are notified. The U.S. military maintains a permanent presence in the Pitifuk Air Base in Greenland's northwest. Historically, Denmark accommodated the U.S. because Copenhagen does not have the capability to defend Greenland and because of U.S. security guarantees to Denmark through NATO, said Christian Sobe Christensen, senior researcher at Copenhagen University's Center for Military Studies. In 2009, the island was granted broad self-governing autonomy, including the right to declare independence from Denmark through a referendum. Greenland's parliament, Inatsisartut, would have to invoke a provision that would have Denmark and Greenland begin negotiations about achieving full independence. Greenland's people would need to endorse independence in a referendum, and an independence agreement between Denmark and Greenland would also require the Danish parliament's consent. What if it becomes independent? Polls show a majority of Greenland's 57,000 inhabitants back independence, but many Greenlanders warn against rashly fearing Greenland could become But many Greenlanders warn against acting rashly, fearing Greenland could become worse off it and expose itself to the U.S. if it quickly seeks independence from Denmark. Greenland's economy is reliant on fishing, which accounts for more than 95% of exports, and annual subsidies from Denmark, which cover about half of the public budget. If Greenland becomes independent, it could choose to become associated with the U.S. without becoming U.S. territory. The island could form a, quote, free association, unquote, with the U.S. that would replace Danish subsidies with U.S. support and protection in return for military rights, a setup similar to the Marshall Islands, Micronesia, and Palau. According to Ulrich Pram Gad, an expert on Greenland, Trump's idea of buying Greenland is based on a misunderstanding of international law and the principle of self-determination, which gives people the right to choose their own political status. What do Denmark and Greenland say? When Trump offered to buy the island during his first presidential term, Danish Prime Minister Mette Frederiksen called it absurd. Trump named Louisiana Governor Jeff Landry as his special envoy to Greenland, drawing renewed criticism from Denmark and Greenland over Washington's interest. Landry publicly supports the idea of Greenland becoming part of the U.S. Danish Foreign Minister Lars Løkke Rasmussen summoned the U.S. ambassador over the envoy's appointment. Afterward, Rasmussen said Denmark and Greenland's representative drew a red line with the ambassador. Frederiksen and Greenland's Prime Minister Jens Frederik Nielsen said in a recent joint statement that Greenland belongs to Greenlanders. You cannot annex another country, they said, not even with an argument about international security. Debate over surfing in German park gets gnarly. David McHugh, Associated Press, Frankfurt, Germany. A debate over how to bring back surfing in Germany's landmark English Garden escalated Sunday after city workers removed a beam surreptitiously deployed over Christmas to restore a surfable wave in the river that runs through the park. For years, the site had been a hotspot for surfers and spectators because of the 3-foot-high wave created by the strong current of the Eisbach River. But the wave disappeared in October after city workers cleared away accumulated sediment, gravel, and debris from the riverbed. That set off discussions between the city and the surfers on how to restore the wave. The authorities were apparently not moving fast enough to suit at least some of the surfers, who enjoyed several days of holiday surfing in wetsuits after unknown individuals deployed the beam across the riverbed on Christmas Day. A banner on the adjacent bridge declared in English, "Just watch, Merry Christmas." The surfers may have been stoked, but the city was not. The fire department moved in early Sunday morning, and the improvised structure and the wave were gone, the DPA news agency reported. The city urged patience and asked an engineering professor from the Munich University of Applied Sciences to advise on possible solutions. Safety concerns became more prominent in May when a 33-year-old surfer died after her board was caught underwater and she couldn't free herself from the attached leash. The city's climate and environmental department said in a statement Sunday that the beam was illegal and potentially dangerous. The department said that after the tragic accident earlier this year, the city must not and cannot tolerate impermissible structures at the Eisbach Wave. A Munich Surfing Association said Thursday on its website that city authorities were imposing too many conditions on efforts to restore the wave and that the process has stalled. A post on the IGSM Surfing Association website said that the city was imposing ever more conditions and added demands on the project, including indemnifying the city for any risks during a test period and procuring an engineering certificate that the adjacent bridge is strong enough to support fastenings to the wave device. The association warns that the site is not a wave for beginners and not a place to start with river surfing, even if one already has experience in the ocean. It warns of concrete blocks placed behind the wave as breaks on the strong current. These are dangerous for inexperienced surfers because in case of an uncontrolled fall, one is pressed against them by several tons of water and gets off at best with serious bruises. Moving on to the Nation and World eEdition Plus Digest, DHS investigates fraud related to COVID-19 aid, Minneapolis. Federal Homeland Security officials were conducting a fraud investigation Monday in Minneapolis, Department of Homeland Security Secretary Kristi Noem said. The action comes after years of investigation that began with a $300 million scheme at the nonprofit Feeding Our Future, for which 57 defendants in Minnesota were convicted. Prosecutors said the organization was at the center of the country's largest COVID-19-related fraud scam when defendants exploited a program intended to provide food for children. A federal prosecutor alleged earlier in December that half or more of the roughly $18 billion in federal funds that supported 14 programs in Minnesota since 2018 may have been stolen. Feds announced funding for rural health care. States will share $10 billion for rural health care next year in a program that aims to offset the Trump administration's massive budget cuts to rural hospitals, federal officials announced Monday. But while every state applied for money from the Rural Health Transformation Program, it won't be distributed equally, and critics worry that the funding might be pulled back if a state's policies don't match up with the administration's. Officials said the average award for 2026 is $200 million, and the fund puts a total of $50 billion into rural health programs over 5 years. States propose how to spend their awards, and the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services assigns project officers to support each state, said agency administrator Dr. Mehmet Oz. Briefly, Taiwan, for a second day, China's military on Tuesday dispatched air, navy, and missile units to conduct joint live-fire drills around the island of Taiwan, which Beijing called a stern warning against separatist forces. Charlie Kirk, a Utah judge, ordered the release of a transcript Monday from a closed-door hearing in October over whether Tyler Robinson, the man charged with killing Charlie Kirk on September 10th, must be shackled during court proceedings. Florida, U.S. Representative Sheila Cherfilis McCormick reiterated her innocence Monday outside a federal courthouse, where she faces charges of conspiring to steal $5 million in federal COVID-19 disaster funds. Cherfilis McCormick was scheduled to be arraigned, but her attorney requested the proceeding be rescheduled to January 20th. New Jersey, two men who died after their helicopters collided midair in New Jersey over the weekend would have had breakfast together often at a cafe near the crash site, authorities said. They identified the two New Jersey men Monday as Kenneth Kirsch, 65, and Michael Greenberg, 71. Mexico, survivors and families of the 13 victims of a deadly train crash in southern Mexico demanded answers Monday as the government vowed to investigate what caused a train to derail the day before on a rail line connecting the Pacific Ocean and the Gulf of Mexico. Tehran, Iran's largest protest in 3 years, erupted Monday after the country's currency sunk to a record low against the U.S. dollar and the head of the central bank resigned. State TV reported the resignation of Mohammad Reza Farzin while traders and shopkeepers rallied in downtown Tehran. U.S. offers new security guarantee to Ukraine. Zelensky says the 15-year assurance is shorter than he'd like. Associated Press, Kyiv, Ukraine. The United States offered Ukraine security guarantees for a period of 15 years as part of a proposed peace plan, Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky said Monday, though he said he would prefer an American commitment of up to 50 years to deter Russia from further attempts to seize its neighbor's land by force. U.S. President Donald Trump hosted Zelensky at his Florida resort on Sunday and claimed Ukraine and Russia are closer than ever to a peace settlement. Negotiators are still searching for a breakthrough on key issues, however, including whose forces withdraw from where in Ukraine and the fate of Ukraine's Russia-occupied Zaporizhzhia nuclear power plant, one of the 10 biggest in the world. Without security guarantees, realistically, this war will not end, Zelensky told reporters in voice messages responding to questions sent via WhatsApp chat. Trump had a positive call Monday with Russia President Vladimir Putin about the war, White House Press Secretary Karoline Leavitt said in a social media post. The two leaders also spoke shortly before Trump's talks with Zelensky on Sunday. United Nations, U.S. pledges $2 billion for humanitarian aid. Administration warns assistance agencies to adapt, shrink, or die. This article is by Jamie Keaton and Matthew Lee, Associated Press, Geneva. The United States announced a $2 billion pledge for UN humanitarian aid Monday as President Donald Trump's administration slashes U.S. foreign assistance and warns United Nations agencies to adapt, shrink, or die in a time of new financial realities. The money is a small fraction of what the U.S. had contributed in the past, but reflects what the administration believes is still a generous amount that will maintain America's status as the world's largest humanitarian donor. This new model will better share the burden of UN humanitarian work with other developed countries and will require the UN to cut, bloat, remove duplication, and commit to powerful new impact, accountability, and oversight mechanisms, Secretary of State Marco Rubio said on social media. The pledge creates an umbrella fund from which money will be doled out to agencies and priorities, a key part of U.S. demands for drastic changes across the UN that alarmed many humanitarian workers and led to severe reductions in programs and services. The $2 billion is only a sliver of the traditional U.S. humanitarian funding for UN-coordinated programs, which has run as high as $17 billion annually in recent years, according to UN data. The State Department said individual UN agencies will need to adapt, shrink, or die. Critics say the Western aid cutbacks are short-sighted, drove millions toward hunger, displacement, or disease, and harmed U.S. soft power around the world. The move caps a crisis year for many UN organizations, including its refugee, migration, and food aid agencies. The Trump administration already cut billions in U.S. foreign aid, prompting the agencies to slash spending, aid projects, and thousands of jobs. Other traditional Western donors reduced outlays as well. Even as the U.S. pulls back its aid contributions, needs have ballooned worldwide. Famine has been recorded this year in parts of conflict-ridden Sudan and Gaza, and floods, drought, and natural disasters have taken many lives or driven thousands from their homes. The cuts will have major implications for UN affiliates like the International Organization for Migration, the World Food Program, and refugee agency UNHCR. And there is a large color photo that dominates the page. Palestinians look over makeshift tents for a camp of displaced people Monday in an area of Gaza City, and we're taken on top of a rise here, looking down, tents on either side. Two males in puffy coats standing, one with a cane, aluminum extendable cane, looking out over many hundreds of tents of varying sizes, and in the background, buildings, some damaged and some many standing. The article is by Jihad al-Shafi, Jihad al-Shafi, Associated Press. And with that, we come to the end of the first half hour of the Decatur Herald and Review for Tuesday, December 30th, 2025. We'll take a short break and return with the second half hour.